Hey, Richie McCormack here from OTB's Rugby Daily. We'll keep you up to date throughout this year's Six Nations. So subscribe to Off The Ball Rugby and you can listen to Rugby Daily for free wherever you get your podcasts.
The Six Nations. Join in the obsession.
Off The Ball Breakfast.
With Optimum Nutrition. The official performance nutrition partners of the Gaelic Players Association and Leinster Rugby.
OTB's Mount Rushmore.
John Duggan, your favourite Irish women's sports person of all time?
Would be Rachel Blackmore. Rachel Blackmore is in a sport where men and women can compete against each other. And to win the champion hurdle on the Great Honeysuckle, to win the Gold Cup on a Plutar, and to win the Grand National on Manila Times is just sensational in the last few years. She's a brilliant ambassador for horse racing. She's a hero in this country. And also, there was a film years ago called National Velvet with Elizabeth Taylor about winning the Grand National. That was a fairy tale. That was fiction. The fact is that Rachel Blackmore has won the race, and she has got, I think, years ahead of her still. So she's my favourite sportswoman of all time.
Is Rachel Blackmore, I don't know what you can say about Rachel really in terms of what she'd achieved, but actually weirdly I'm going to stay in racing and not pick Rachel. I'm going to go with Nina Carberry. Shouldn't be forgotten that Paul Carberry, who in my view is the most naturally talented horseman I've ever seen, actually said that his sister Nina was more talented than him, and he wasn't joking. Nina for me was an inspiration as a jockey, and it was, if you wanted to get out in the bumper, which in betting parlance means get your money back after losing a few quid, you back Nina. And this is at a time when there was still probably some kind of prejudice towards female riders. Nina actually eroded that, basically. She was so good, and everyone wanted to back her in the bumper regardless of what she was on. Gifted rider. And she's actually now the most famous of all the Carberries.
Right. Well, then,
Dave Moore.
Yes.
Is your favourite Irish women's sports person of all time?
For me, it's Rosemary Smith, who is a rally driver, a pioneer. She smashed cars and boundaries and once drove 53 kilometres through the Khyber Pass in reverse. Amazing.
I did not know that. That's a brilliant answer from Dave Moore. We've been wheeling out the big guns. We had Tommy Walsh yesterday. We have two more today. Legendary sports journalist Cliona Foley and Irish Grand Slam winner, soccer player, and also Gaelic footballer Nora Stapleton. Ladies, you're both very welcome to the show. Thanks very much.
Hi guys, good morning.
Thanks, good morning.
Nora, I've been saying that we have a slight bias, or certainly I have a slight bias to the multi-sports people on these lists. You played Gaelic football for Donegal, won Junior and Intermediate All-Irelands, and then also won FAI Cups with UCD, is that correct?
Yeah, I did. Geez, the UCD and Donegal days feel so long ago, don't they? But you know, it's a really interesting thinking back on that, because when I was playing my UCD, we got to play our final in the old Lansdowne Road. And then quite soon after that, I got to play in Croke Park, and then was lucky enough to play in the Aviva with Ireland in rugby. So it's kind of like, you know, the three, in a way, three stadiums, three different names and three different sports, which I only kind of copped on recently, so it's nice. But also thinking about this year, I wonder, you know, are gone are the days of the multi-sport person, which would be interesting, because I think now the pathways are so good coming through for young girls. Will they start to specialise earlier, and we'll miss that kind of opportunity to see people, yeah, just do so well in a few different sports.
That's why Vicky Wall is yet to be mentioned by anybody on any of these lists, and I'm not sure which sport she'd qualify under now. Maybe if the Sevens go and win something at the Olympic Games, Cliona, then that'll be like, okay, so you dragged a Division 2 team to an All-Ireland and then to a Senior All-Ireland the next year, and then you went to Australia and had a good time, and then you came back to play rugby and won something in the Olympics. So, you know, the Mount Rushmore might need to be changed at some point sooner rather than later.
Well, that's the brilliant thing about Mount Rushmore is that it but I do think there's a level of longevity that has to be established for Mount Rushmore, and that's where I don't think Vicky Wall qualifies yet, because she's had a very short AFL career and she's just gone into a rugby career. So you're right. Let's see what happens with her. But I mean, a brilliant footballer and also just a brilliant, you know, that determination she brings to every sport is something that is common, I think, with most people who get to Mount Rushmore.
So despite the fact we've established everybody's credentials in GA and soccer, we're not doing those today. Today we're doing the best of the rest, as we call it. But we also are leaving some gap for Olympics and Paralympics on tomorrow's show and the boxers. So it's a narrow enough list today, Cliona.
It is. And do you know what? I have a book here in front of me. It's called Heroes of Irish Sporting Life. And it was written by three of the best sports writers I think the country's ever produced. Vincent Hogan, David Walsh and Liam Hayes. It was written in 1995, right? So 29 years ago, they feature 330 pages featured 51 athletes and two of them were women. Danielle Sullivan and Michelle Smith. So that just tells you, I think, just the distance that we have come in 30 years. I don't think today's athletes actually even understand how much progress has been made in the last few years with visibility, with success. Do you know, last weekend, all we were talking about was women at the World Indoors in Athletics, and it'll be the same when Cheltenham pops up. You know, we'll be talking about Rachel Blackmore again, probably. So just the progress that has been made is phenomenal for a start, and it makes it hard then to narrow it down.
So when we asked you for this list, Nora, what was your initial kind of, yeah, okay, I have a fair idea of who I'm going to put on today?
Oh, geez. Well, I don't know if I had a fair idea. You know, you kind of start thinking of people and then it's nice the way that it is in categories, but it kind of makes it harder as well at the same time. I think probably the first one that went up for me, or my conflict was, do you pick people who are still competing versus those who have finished in their career? So we'll probably debate a little bit about that. And I don't know if there's a criteria for that. But then kind of reflecting back on, okay, well, who has been pretty inspirational or who I wouldn't have known about and who wouldn't have been in my sport? And the first person that did come to mind was Rosemary Smith. She was kind of the easiest one, I think, for me to put down anyway on the list. We would have, I don't know if it was like 2013, 2014, one of the times when we were nominated for the Irish Times Sport Ireland Sportswoman of the Year Awards. I think like Fiona was in there and we came along, but Rosemary was given, was it an honorary award or something? And that was my first time meeting her and hearing her talk. And you're just like, oh my God, you know, how do we not know about this woman's career and just what she's done and how she really stuck her two fingers up to everyone around her and, you know, sped off in the car. And you're just kind of going, that's absolutely amazing. And I think it just, for me, it highlighted, God, we really are, there's such a lack of visibility around what women do in sport and their achievements and these amazing stories. And just kind of coming across her, what is it, was 10 years ago, just really kind of gave me inspiration, even though it was a completely different sport. I just thought, you're cool and you're breaking down barriers still even at her age. So yeah, that was probably the first one and the easiest one maybe.
Cliona,
yeah, I had her in as well, Ger, because not only because of what she did, like, and her big thing all her career, like I grew up in the 70s, everybody in Ireland knew about Rosemary Smith. People nowadays might, you know, there was a big gap there then because we didn't have anybody who followed her. But like she was famous. She was everywhere. She was, you know, because of her achievements in the 1960s as a rally driver. And doing some research on her, even when I interviewed her a few years ago, I found out amazing things like Billy Coleman, who we regard as one of our greatest rally drivers ever. The first rally he won in Ireland, she was second behind him. When she went in 65, I think it was the one she's most she was most proud of was winning this Tulip rally, the one that went across Europe, because 180 cars started it, 45 finished it, and she won it.
All right.
And that will tell you all you need to know about her. And in fact, that was one of the ones I love that somebody mentioned her about reversing up the Khyber Pass. That was London to Sydney. And her father was her father had garages and had taught her loads of things when she was younger. And one of the things she remembered that day, her gearbox, her pistons went, and her father had said to her once, if you're ever in trouble, reverse. So she let herself go back down the Khyber Pass, turned the car around and reversed for 53 miles up over it and around the other side. That was a measure of her determination. And in that Tulip rally, they got caught on ice at one stage. And her father had also told her, if you're ever stuck, take out a car mat and put it under the wheels and you can get off ice. And she had none. And she had this very posh suede jacket that she bought in Spain or somewhere. And she said, oh, the jacket, and she put the jacket under the wheels. And anybody who knew her knew how much she loved fashion. But that was the level she would go to win a race. She was extraordinarily competitive, just an incredible woman. And she went back then and did that rally at age 78, and she went back to the gym to get fit to do it again 50 years later. So that was the kind of woman she was. She also broke the Irish land speed record in 1978. She drove at 156 miles an hour down the Carrigbrehan Strait down in Cork. You know, so like, never mind what she won, but it was also just her, just seeing her on TV, just afraid of nobody and taking no, you know what, from anybody.
Can I add as well, like, she used to tell the story how she still, you know, the way she had the driving school, and she'd talk about how she'd still want to teach women how to do handbrake turns in the driving school. So,
yeah. So somewhat frowned upon these days, but so can you explain? There would have been coverage of her career contemporaneously, yeah.
There was. She would have been very well covered, because what she was doing was extraordinary. Like, she was a woman in rally driving, a really male sport at the time. So she did get lots of coverage at the time. I always say that, you know, when women do, they had to do extraordinary things to get media coverage for a long time. And she did extraordinary things. You know, she was on the Johnny Carson show. She was on What's My Line in America. Like, she was all over the world because she was amazing. And that Tulip rally, actually, Richard Burton and Liz Taylor were staying in the same hotel. I think Burton started it officially, and when she came home that night, she got a letter from him, and she got a letter from them and a bouquet of flowers. Yeah, but I mean, she was a super, super, superstar.
I have a feeling that maybe the conversation we're having here might catapult her into reckoning for the final lists, which I think everybody assumes Katie Taylor is going to be on. I think everybody assumes Sonia is going to be on. But you're kind of making a case that the trailblazing aspect, the longevity,
She was a works driver. You know what I mean? Chrysler took her on as a works driver, so she was their factory driver. Now, she would say she reckons she got the job because of how she looked. Like, she had done a fashion designing course and she had worked as a model. And somebody who came in one day to her in the shop, actually, to buy a dress, get a dress designed, was a woman who wanted a co-driver, and she went off, and that's how she first discovered she actually was brilliant at this. But she was a works driver, and her big thing was that they hired me because I look good, but by God, they're going to know how good I am, you know. And that was the thing with her. And she drove famously a Hillman Imp. And again, this was at a time when cars were extreme, no power steering, you know, cars were extremely hard to drive. But it was her willingness never to quit, never to give up, really. I think that was so incredible.
Okay, so you both have Rosemary Smith on. Who's next for you, Cliona?
Well, she's been mentioned already. I think we can't look past Rachel Blackmore. Johnny said there with JD that, you know, he went for Nina Carberry in terms of horse racing. First of all, I think the place that horse racing has in the Irish psyche, you know, if they're, you know, such a popular sport in Ireland, you know, are there women who've done extraordinary things in it? Yes, there are. But what Rachel Blackmore has done is extraordinary. Nina and Katie Walsh both had Cheltenham winners before her, both won the Irish Grand National, but they came from racing families. And I think that in the days when there was a bias against giving women a leg up on a horse and thinking they weren't strong enough, I think that may have helped them. It doesn't take from their talent whatsoever. They were both extraordinary riders, as I said, and did brilliant things. And I think Katie was third in the Aintree Grand National, and Nina was certainly a top 10 as well, maybe seventh. But for Rachel Blackmore to come from where she came from with no family connections, no, she had to get it. She had no contact book. She had to start. She went professional as well, which they didn't do, which is very risky. And I think there's only a handful of women in Ireland who have ever been professional riders, flat or jump. So that was extraordinary. And then she does what she does. And John mentioned all the things that she done. You know, six winners in Cheltenham in 2021, has won all the big races in Cheltenham. I think that's what makes her extraordinary. And I was looking back, like, when she went professional in the beginning, in the 2018 to 2019 season, she had 90 wins from 615 rides. It was her ability to get rides, to get people to give her rides, and then to work her butt off. Like, people look at her now and think, oh my God, she's brilliant, you know, and of course she's going to get a ride. But that's what started. And then in 2021, she ended up in a battle with Paul Townend for for the Riders' Championship. You know what I mean? 92 wins from 570 rides. Like, she pushed Paul Townend to the absolute pin of his collar that year to win the jockey's title. That's what I think makes her exceptional.
And for context, Paul Townend has access to the Willie Mullins horses, and so it's not a guarantee, but he's obviously the biggest, most successful trainer, and he wins the Trainers' Championship every year, so you would expect his retained jockey to win that kind of comfortably. The other thing I think about Rachel, which is slightly underspoken about sometimes, the relationship with Honeysuckle. Honeysuckle's such a great horse and has these statement wins at Christmas at Leopardstown and again at Cheltenham, but then rolls over and does it again. The intense pressure of being on board an unbackable odds-on favourite and being able to just calmly present the horse at precisely the right moment. You know, there's probably greater victories that she's had from on lesser horses, but I do think...
Yeah.
The stress and hassle of that is something that we underestimate sometimes when you're the favourite.
Yeah, I think she has an extraordinarily calm brain, because that's like, ask any of the trainers, and obviously she's got the Bromhead gig now, and that makes, you know, she is getting the horses that you dream of, but it's her ability to present a horse at the right place at the right time in and bide her time in a race. You know, that is part of that thing with Honeysuckle as well. You're right. And that's why there was, again, that longevity there, and why she kept producing Honeysuckle when, you know, even to last year, like it was took the house down in Cheltenham last year. But I think it's her, like, there's a terrible pressure as well on jockeys, I think everybody will agree, to win, and from punters to win. And now she is the punter's favourite, and she carries that pressure with her every single time she gets on a horse. Now she won the Tiestes recently with a 14-1 shot, and you're right, it's arguably harder sometimes to win it with a favourite that you're not sure about, but I think that's her. I think she has, apart from her riding skills, I think she has incredible mental fortitude, and it makes her, but I think it's the thing of coming from nowhere, not having nobody knowing who she was or giving her leg up, and coming from her background, that makes her really, really extraordinary.
Nora, you've also gone for somebody in horse racing, but it's on the training side. It's Jessica Harrington.
Yeah, but just that first, I mean, it's very hard. I don't know if we can look past Rachel. And also, didn't she win the BBC World Sports Star of the Year in 2021 as well? I mean, it's great getting those types of awards in Ireland, but when you have other countries doing that as well, it's huge recognition. Yeah, look, I kind of wanted to include Jessica Harrington because I thought, I mean, she does come from the sport herself as well as an event rider, so she has represented Ireland. But the fact that moving into that training position, and she's had so many winners, she's also, I think she's the only woman to ever be nominated for this Phillips Sports Manager of the Year award. And, you know, in a country where we have so few high performance or high performing female coaches, and I don't know if any, maybe Angela Down, I don't know if she got nominated for that as well. But that is, you know, that's huge. And she's really, I think she has inspired other women who are looking in that coaching space, and what's possible, and, you know, who are just kind of carving their own path. And I think it's kind of the message that it sends out, I guess. And I said, you know, we're trying to, in Sport Ireland, we've a lot of work coming up around high performing coaches and females in that space. And I think we're so far off trying to level out that side of the sport. But, you know, away from her being an inspiration to coaches, like, she's just achieved so much as a trainer. She still is. She's obviously a bit sick at the minute, and she's coming back from that, but she's still going to have horses racing this year as well. And is it, you know, do you include Rachel as someone who's still in amongst it and still can win how many more races as a jockey? I'm not sure. So this is the kind of debate that that I've been going through.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
It's a fascinating question if you're pitting Rachel up against Jessica Harrington, because you both make very compelling cases. Do you concede any of the Jessica Harrington points, Cliona, that would lead you to remove Rachel Blackmore, or is it not an either or?
I have to say, and I just think Jess Harrington's amazing, and I've, you know, heard her speak about how hard it was to take over from when her husband went, and people came to the yard and didn't expect her to be training the horses at all. But I do think that what Rachel Blackmore has done at that level, at the top level, as well, particularly Cheltenham, you know, the six winners, the Olympics of the sport and all the rest, is in such a short time, I think you can have her there, even though her career is so relatively speaking, is so short so far, you know. still amazing.
I think probably because her level is so high that she, if you had a rule of like current can't make it, you'd be breaking it for what Rachel Blackmore has done. And I mean, this time next week it could be like, oh look, she's just won another one.
yeah.
Totally.
On that point though, Leona Maguire is on your list, Cliona. Is it too early or is she getting there?
No, I don't think it's too early actually. And I'll tell you why, because like one of the things about having somebody on Mount Rushmore is because they are such, you know, they're so, what they've done is so groundbreaking that it inspires other people to be there, you know, and there is a rake, there's a gang of young Irish women playing in America and coming into the pro ranks now, and all of them, every single one of them mentions Leona Maguire, and that's why, and it's why a lot of them are pursuing golf and think they have a chance to be a professional golfer, because... And remember, she was 14 when she won the Irish Close, right? And Lisa, her sister, was equally good. They were both brilliant. But it's what she's done. When she went to America, top Irish amateur, or top amateur in the world for, I don't know, 135 weeks or something like that, right? Then she goes on the satellite tour the first year out. She makes all of her cuts. She finishes seventh on it and she gets into the LPGA. But it's her consistency in the LPGA since, I think, that gets her on this list. Okay, she hasn't won the major. Okay, she should have won it. She was a shot up at the PGA last year and her putter went cold and she hasn't. And that is the one thing you could say yet. Maybe you don't put her on the Mount Rushmore because she hasn't won a major yet. But in terms of everything else that she's done so far, I think, and even her Solheim Cup record, mm-hmm. been extraordinary. And of course all Irish golfers are brilliant, I think, at match play. It's in our blood, it's in our DNA, match play. I think it makes us special. But in her four years on the tour, she's made over 4 million to date.
Not a bad start.
Yeah. And that also inspires young Irish women to think, oh my God, I can be a pro golfer and I can make a living out of this. I mean, that's vital. But like, even in the majors, she was tied fourth in the British Open, I think tied sixth at the Evian. She's close to a major. And this kind of year, she's talking about winning the major. And maybe, yes, you have to wait for her to win that major. But she's got only woman to be top 10 in the world, to get up to top 10 ranking. She's had 20 top 10 finishes in the professional ranks in America. And it's in America as well, you know, which is where all the top people are. I would have her there, I think, close to it anyway.
It's a truly global sport. Like it has been absolutely massive in other countries. And so she is genuinely competing on a world stage. Shout out to Paul Fitzpatrick from the Anglo-Celt, who put her on Cavan's Mount Rushmore before she'd done most of this stuff and was getting a bit of flack at the time, going, what about the footballers in the 40s, 50s and 60s? And he was like, no, she's going to deliver, and she has delivered. So maybe we're selling a bit of the future here, and we're buying early shares in Leona as a future major winner. From the rugby team that you played on that won a Grand Slam in 2013 that beat the All Blacks before any Irish team had beaten the All Blacks at senior level, who did you go for, Nora?
I felt that we definitely need a rugby person. You could have had a rugby day, I'm sure, as well. That could be debatable as well. But I was tossing up between Fiona Coughlan and Joy Neville, and a couple of reasons for it. So like with Joy, what is it, she's 70 caps, I think, so for Ireland, played in World Cups, an amazing leader on the pitch, you know, and like somebody who you would look to change a game when you're playing. People might remember, like when we did win that Grand Slam in 2013, it was Joy who got in over the ball when Italy were attacking quite close to our line inside our 22, and Joy got in into the ruck and stole the ball. When the referee blew the whistle, I thought she's flipping giving away a penalty, but it was for it was the other direction, and then we managed to get up the pitch and clear the lines kind of thing. So so she was one of the key reasons why we won that match and why we won the Grand Slam as well. So she has her playing career, and then she finishes that and then goes on and decides that you know, she's going to go down the fish eating route. And she's, we've all heard her stories of why she started and, you know, how she was told no woman would ever referee a men's game and things like that there. And she just, I think it shows you her doggedness that she wanted to prove all that wrong as well. But certainly, I mean, is she the first woman to referee any men's professional game? I think she's the second woman to referee an international men's game. And then the first woman to be an officiator at the Men's World Cup. Like, it's, I mean, you can't really, like, what more can you do when you move into that officiating space? And then 2017 as well, she was voted World Rugby Referee of the Year. So the definitely compelling case there for Joy. For Fiona, again, was it 85 caps for her country. For me, though, for Fiona, it's her, that team through 2013, 2014. There's a whole history leading up to that. You know, she would have been captain in 2010. So my first year in was 2010 and we went to the World Cup there. But that team wouldn't have been as good if it wasn't for Fiona and her leadership. Like, if you think back, so 10 years ago, you know, we were still only training at the weekend, coming in a Saturday morning, doing a couple of training sessions that day, staying over, doing the same on a Sunday. And so you tried to add in as much training as you could within those mini chunks of time with the team. So to have somebody like Fiona did a load of making sure people were working hard away from camp as well. Like, even in Dublin, we would train as a group in Dublin for fitness sessions. Like, she'd be the one trying to empty the tank and driving you on in fitness. And she did that through every touch that she had with that team. She was driving standards. And I think any good team really needs that person. And everyone respected her for it as well. And now look what she's doing as a pundit and analysis in RTE. I think she's one of the best in the country. She certainly, like, would talk about how difficult that was as well, going into punditry and not, you know, maybe not getting any feedback, knowing, am I doing a good job or not? No idea. But she definitely was. She's now coaching. She's coaches all the time in her school. Her ambition and aim is just to keep girls in sport and boys, but particularly the girls, like, trying to make sure that they're active. I think she's coaching her local Gaelic for Mothers GAA football team. She's coaching rugby and flat out. But for me, between the two, it's hard to look past Joy because she's done absolutely amazing. But I think if it wasn't for Fiona in that team in 2013, 2014, we wouldn't be in the history books and we wouldn't be still talking about Grand Slam and beating New Zealand.
We started this conversation with Cliona talking about the book from, I think you said 1989, and you made reference there, Nora.
1995.
Nora, you made reference there to Joy still facing, you'll never make it as a referee, you'll never be allowed to referee the men's game. And that's only 10 years ago. So, like, while there are changes, and while it's important that we recognise there are changes in visibility, everything is kind of hastening slowly.
Yeah, look, it's very silly. And it's just, you know, I think sometimes as women in sports, like, when people kind of say, like, oh, you know, your time will come, and it just takes time to build the women's game and it takes time to X, Y, and Z. But, like, do you know what? It's not about time anymore. It was about discrimination against women back in the day and not letting both men's and women's sports grow 100 years ago. So I think now that's where, like, that positive discrimination, it's where, you know, it's positive to see particular initiatives and programs that NGBs and governing bodies and things like that are rolling out to accelerate, whether it's accelerate coaches, accelerate female officiators, to ensure the pathways in place. I think you do need that positive discrimination and more equity towards that, because we have to, I think we've seen a bit of a fast track in the last 4 or 5 years. Momentum has been gained, but now I'm like, no, like, let's double down on it. Let's go more. Same with visibility. Like, I think there's been huge strides in visibility of women's sport. but that's in some sports than others, to be fair. And, you know, it's some newspapers more than others, it's some radio more than others, and it's some times in the year versus other times in the year. So and the thing is, like, there are so many, like, the fans of women's sports is huge now, you know, so I don't think it's a case anymore of like, oh, but, you know, not everybody wants to hear about a particular story. Like, the fans of women's sport is growing. Like, that's a global stat that we now know. Like, the research is there to back it up in terms of people who are tuning in to watch, the commercialization of the sport, etc. So all of that is pointing towards invest now in women's sport, because you're going to miss out if you don't. So I think, without kind of repeating myself, like, it is definitely time for everybody to get on board and start realizing that acceleration needs to occur.
100%. To go back to the picks, so you're picking Fiona Coughlan, you've got Jessica Harrington, you both have Rosemary Smith. This is where it gets really interesting. Cliona, you're yoinking Katrina McKiernan from the Olympics.
I would definitely have to give her a mention here, because I'm afraid she won't get into the Olympic one, because actually Katrina's never did it on the track. By her own admission, she would say that as well. She was never a great track runner. She only went to the Olympics twice, and didn't have any great success at the Olympics. But for everything else that she did, and again, for being, you know, proper legend in Irish athletics and inspiring people in marathon running and in cross country running, and in just even still to this day, she's just such a huge advocate for health and running and well-being. Four times she was runner up in world cross countries. When they brought in the European cross countries, she won it the first year, the inaugural year. And then she went, when she moved to marathon, extraordinary what she did. She still holds the Irish marathon record. And her very first marathon in Berlin was 2:23. And it was at the time, and this was before the African, the strong African influence, but at the time it was the fastest marathon by a woman in history. And I just think that her achievements, doing them from home as well, always staying true to her roots and thinking, you know, she defied, like, lots of people told her, go to America. Why aren't you in America? Go to America. She stayed at home. She worked for a long time in the county council. She trained at a local golf club. She stuck with her. She had, again, this conviction in herself, belief in herself, quiet conviction in herself that she knew what she was doing right. And her Joe Dorn and her Doon and her coach was they were very single-minded. But on the world, at that world level, she was world class, and I think has just her marathon breakthroughs kind of, I think, changed how people thought about marathon running in this country.
Was there a situation, Cliona, as well? I'm speaking purely from an ignorant standpoint here, that she just peaked at the wrong times, or that the Olympics, came along at the wrong times for her?
She would have had injuries and everything else. But, like, unlike Sonia, she wasn't out running on the circuit. You know what I mean? Right. She wasn't used to track running, if you like, and she was kind of somebody who would come to track running, you know, and have a go at it. But I don't think her heart was ever in it, because she loved grass running. She loved cross country. She was made for. Even still, you look at her, and she was winning. She's been running, you know, road races up until a couple of years ago. You know, just glides across the ground. She was just a beautiful runner. But tough as nails, like, you know, one of these really modest, quiet-spoken people, which totally belies just how tough she was. And I, you know, as I said, the fact that she still holds, she holds the marathon, the 2:22:23 was Amsterdam as well, and it was a really tough course. I think it was 2:23:44 was the one her debut. But, like, she won the Berlin Marathon, she won the London Marathon, she won all these big city marathons.
I have a slight bias, Cliona, against in favour of the runners, because everybody in the world can run. And so if you're winning the marathon, it feels to me like we're talking about genuinely world class. Leona is competing in a world class event. Like, what Katrina McKiernan did twice, winning the London Marathon, is ridiculous.
No, you're right. I mean, to win the big city marathons at the time, which was such a boom as well, you know, was extraordinary. And she just had this incredible toughness and ability to natural endurance. But she was, you know, she put in the work. She really put in the hard work as well. Like, I can see where you're coming from. I think there is an argument to be made on that. I think golf now, with the Asian connection now and so many Asians coming through in it, it's becoming a global sport. But you're right, you know, there's nothing purer than running. And running distance, running.
And not to labour the point, like, but just kind of quick, I don't remember this era at all, but Caitriona McKiernan was going for gold if she was fit in the 2000 Sydney Games. And unfortunately, it is the way in which we'll always view the sport. How did you get on at the Olympic Games? And had she been fit, had she been on the podium, never mind actually getting the gold, I think the notoriety in which she'd be held in the whole country would be just on a completely different level. But I guess what you have there are the facts that paint out the level that she really was at, and that I think a lot of people probably who are a bit younger may not actually quite realise or remember.
Yeah, London, Berlin, Amsterdam, winning these marathons, winning those big city marathons at the time was just amazing, you know.
Yeah, if somebody was to do it now, there'd be open top parades, basically.
Yeah.
You've got a totally random one to finish us off this morning, Nora.
Very random.
Karen Weeks.
Yeah, well, so like when I was going through it, you know, what struck me was we take this approach by looking at who's won European, you know, World Championship, World Cups, Olympics. And there's a whole audience of adventurers out there who are like doing huge, huge races and doing really well. And then you go past races and it's more of those kind of solo adventures and really putting your body on the line to achieve something. And you know, we mentioned like tough as nails, but like what Karen has done, I mean, most recently, I suppose, her 3,000 plus mile solo row across the Atlantic, is just huge, to be the first Irish woman to do it. And, you know, when you hear her speak about the training that she had to do for that, you know, she has made her own gym in her home. She'd be rowing for 4 hours a day. She was afraid of thunder and lightning, so she used to put big posters of like lightning striking water in her gym, and she'd download thunderstorms onto Spotify and row with the sound up full volume so that she could visualize what that's like. And, you know, she's a true performance athlete. When you think of like what do we do, we visualize winning or your training and how you prepare yourself to overcome whatever is going to be put in front of you, and that whole idea of control the controllables and being comfortable with whatever else happens, you know, and things like, I mean, I think at one stage she had to lock herself in her boat for 4 days as a storm just threw the boat around the place, and she's looking at three-story waves coming down on top of her, and you're on your own in the middle of the ocean. So like, that's, you know, when you think of, well, who does she inspire? There's a huge, just a whole cohort of Irish adventurers, ultra runners, you know, kayakers, ice climbers, mountaineers, whatever it might be, who look up to the likes of Karen. And she has her saying, you know, she can do, so can you. And her aim is just to inspire other women to do something similar, to find what adventure they're going to do and to set out on it. So I wanted to put her in so that we can talk about that and that side of things, that, you know, there's just phenomenal women out there that we don't hear about who are, as I said, running 400 plus miles over mountains in different countries and really placing quite high and, you know, coming first in their category, first in races and things like that as well. But we tend to maybe... we're lucky if we hear about them, but Karen is definitely trying to change that. So she was one of my nominations.
Absolutely, it's a phenomenal shout, and like there's it's such an endless list, especially given the parameters of today's edition of Mount Rushmore. But just one other person I just like to mention, just who I guess kind of came into focus because we did a piece with one of her opponents before the last Katie Taylor fight was Deirdre Gogarty. And when we talk about like trailblazers in the sport, the fact that herself and Christy Martin played out one of the greatest fights in the history of boxing on the undercard to Frank Bruno and Mike Tyson in 1996, with Don King promoting that fight. Martin obviously gets onto the cover of Sports Illustrated in the aftermath, who herself has an absolutely unbelievable story. And half of that fight...
Building- they're fundraising to build a statue to her in. She mightn't make Mount Rushmore, but they're making a statue to her in Drogheda, aren't they?
Yes, and I think we've had her on the show maybe last year before the first Taylor Cameron fight. And when we talk about people being an inspiration, Katie Taylor has literally name checked her as an inspiration for her career. So I think that's just probably worth mentioning her in the context of all the other names you've had this morning.
So we obviously gave you very strict parameters for today, but if you were to have no parameters whatsoever, Nora, who's on your Mount Rushmore?
Katie Taylor. Probably still keep with Fee, because it's coming from that sport as well. Jeez, Sonia Sullivan and maybe one of the Cork footballers to just how good they were. Yeah, I guess. But you put me on the spot there.
I was wondering if the GAA background was going to reestablish itself there so you can go home again at Christmas if you want to. Kleena?
Well, you got to have Katie Taylor on it, I think. You got to have Sonia on it. Best in the world of what she did for years. I would have Rachel Blackmore on it, I think, already, which might sound a bit mad. And the fourth one is a difficult one as well. In terms of what she's done so far, even though it's still a young career, but in terms of where she is in her career and in terms of her visibility and also her success and historically leading Ireland to something they've never done before, I think Katie McCabe, there's a good shout of a Katie McCabe. Yeah. Two Katies in there.
Right.
I agree. Yeah.
Thought you were going to finish that sentence with Rashida, but maybe it's just 5 months too early for her.
Exactly.
There you go. In terms of Trailblazers, both of you have been. So thanks a million for spending your time with us this morning to help us try and sift through this to come up with something that we can all stand over. It's been brilliant spending time with you. Nora, Kleena, thanks a million, folks.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
OTB's Mount Rushmore. Off the ball, breakfast.
With Optimum Nutrition, there's more of you in you. Unlock it with the world's number one sports nutrition brand.